Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, and welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello, good, Tater. How you doing?
Just fine.
Yeah, enjoying the wonderful winter weather.
Yeah, it's, well, I don't know if wonderful's the word for it. It is winter weather.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, well, I feel like after Christmas, I just want it gone. Like, I like it up until then, and then it's just like, no, just be spring, please.
Nah, we got the worst 2 months of winter after Christmas, January and February.
I know. And it doesn't help that I've had one of the many triple-demics has taken me down. I had one in December, now I got another one. Man. Neither one have been COVID, they've both been different, and they've both sucked.
Well, there's just so many things going around, it almost makes it worth voluntarily wearing a mask everywhere you go just to be on the safe side.
No, I do. I was on the subway the other day and I was wearing a mask and I was like the amount of coughing and sniffling and sneezing just ambiently in the subway car.
Oh yeah.
It's like, it's not like one out of every three people sick. I feel like two out of every three people are sick in the city right now. It's delightful.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's a lot, being in a closed in space with a bunch of strangers, no telling what you might pick up.
Yeah, I mainly just drank like tea this week. I did not have anything fun to drink. Did you? Very much better.
Well, no, we're observing dry January. However,
you could still have a fun drink.
Well, that's true. Well, we did. Justin sent down, since we were doing that, sent down basically to Mom, mocktail, some kind of a kit that you can order. And it's got like various mixes for mocktails in there. And several of them were kind of more like a Negroni than anything else that I could observe. So I didn't really like them, but Mom liked them because Mom likes a Negroni. So she has been having herself a cocktail each night, but it's a mocktail cocktail. So,
oh, nice.
No alcohol, but she seems to like it. There's evidently some groups out there and you can order them and they'll send them to you. And of course you don't have to have an adult there to sign for it because it's not alcoholic.
That's true. Well, that's cool. Yes. Yeah, so, that's a very big and growing market right now. So, there are some good ones out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a big part of the bar culture too. They're doing them in the bars. We talked about that a few episodes back, offering a line of mocktails in the bars too. So, that is a growing thing. I guess it's health concerns and driving concerns and things like that.
I think it's good. I mean, I feel like instead of the sort of back and forth of like, is drinking terrible and no one should do it, or is drinking wonderful and everyone should do it? It's like, I think it's good to run a bar program where everybody can sit at your bar and whatever their specific requirements are, whether they want alcohol, whether they want low alcohol, no alcohol, alcohol, like, just you should provide for all of that, you know.
That's right.
It's cooler to just have it not be a big deal. Like, whatever you want, I got it. There's no precedent here that you've gotta, yeah, you gotta get wasted.
Well, you can feel not left out, and also you don't get any peer pressure. If you're holding a drink that looks like a cocktail, nobody comes up and says, hey, why aren't you drinking? Oh, you can have one, come on, you know.
Well, that's the way I would always instruct my menus when I was writing menus back in the good old days, was I'd run my bartenders through every menu, like every drink, every alcoholic drink on the menu. We would talk about if it could be translated to a mocktail, and then if it could be, how would you do that? We also then had separate mocktails that you could just order. But I also, you know, sometimes you look at a drink and you're like, I don't want a drink, but I want that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that sounds good. And, you know, not, you can't always do it. Like, if it's a Negroni play, it's hard. when the drink's all alcohol, it's hard to be like, well, how can I do that with no alcohol? But then there's lots of times where shaken drinks, you know, long drinks, if you've got infused syrups or, you know, shrubs, cool things that you make in-house that don't have alcohol in them, it's very easy to say, yeah, I can do something like that with those same flavors that you like, and I can take the alcohol out. So I think it's always good to have that flexibility, like have some mocktails, but also know how to work with your menu and how to do fun things with it. Again, yeah, that make people feel like they're having a fun experience and part of it. It's not some separate thing like, oh, a mocktail. Here's some cranberry juice from the gun. Yeah. Nobody wants that.
Oh, Shirley Temple.
Well, I mean, a well-made Shirley Temple. There's nothing wrong with that, but, you know. Anyway, we're not talking Shirley Temples today. We are talking Dark and Stormies. For this dark and crappy weather, let's talk dark and stormy cocktails.
Yeah, that's very appropriate. We get that all the time anymore.
But, yeah. Inspired by nothing. I don't know. I did drink a lot of ginger in my tea this week, but we haven't talked about the dark and stormy before. It's a simple drink. It is just dark rum and ginger beer with lime. And basically a Moscow mule with rum instead of vodka. But it's interesting for a couple of reasons. One that I think is most fascinating, it's one of the few examples of a drink where someone owns the trademark to the cocktail name.
Yeah, you can't have a dark and stormy without a specific rum.
Yeah, this is a bit of an anomaly, you know. And this is a question I've had before where I'll say like, oh, I called this drink, I named a drink this, but this name has probably been used before. And people are like, well, how can you do that? It's like, well, no, every time you make a menu, you don't run off to trademark everything on it. That's the history of bartending. The culture of bartending is very much everybody contributes, everybody modifies, everybody builds on top of the previous established information. And occasionally somebody makes a drink that has the right combination of name and a good build that it gets kind of locked in as like, oh, this is what this is. But nobody makes money off of that. It just becomes the shorthand for what that drink is, you know?
Except for the dark and stormy.
And the painkiller. But I mean, we're talking dark and stormy this week.
That's right.
So the dark and stormy, there are a few more. I don't know. Those are the only two that I've ever come across that have that. But anyway, yes, the Dark and Stormy trademark is owned by Gosling's Black Seal Rum, which is a very good rum. We'll talk about them first before we get to the Dark and Stormy. They get started in 1806, and that is when James Gosling, the oldest son of a wine and spirits merchant, set out to America on a ship called Mercury from Gravesend, Kent, England. He had a whole bunch of merchandise that he was going to sell there, but his charter ran out 91 days into the voyage, and so they just pulled into the nearest port, which happened to be St. George's, Bermuda, and he never left. He set up shop there instead.
Close enough to America. We're just going to set up shop right here. My pass ran out. I had a 91-day pass. We made it here, so this is where we're going to stop.
You know, I don't really know. My specialty is bartending, not the intricacies of naval charters, so I'm not really sure how that works. But in any case, it worked out for him. He got a storefront up and running on Front Street by 1924. His brother came and joined him, and they successfully maintain like a merchant's like shop, all kinds of goods there with their family for 127 years. Now, obviously not the two brothers. They weren't vampires, but their family carried on for a long time.
Well, actually, by the time they got to the rum part, it had to have been other family members because that was almost 60 years after they landed there.
Yeah, I mean, especially when we're talking like people, the lifespans in the 1800s, I would imagine. But it was 1857 when they started actually making rum. And this was like, you know, in response to rum becoming a very big thing
in that area.
In the international marketplace. Mm-hmm. So they were not making their rum. They were buying rum and blending it and making their own like private label, I guess, before private labels were a thing. Their own rum at first.
Because they were importers and exporters and handling various liquors. And that was one that they decided to add their own touch to.
And that's not uncommon even now. I mean, you know, that's there. If you buy a labeling of rum, you might be buying something that is made those people make it, and they also might just be people that buy barrels from other distilleries and then blend their own rum. And that isn't even a quality thing. Like, that's just a whole other art form, blending rum versus, you know, making your own. Even people that make their own, they then blend it. So, you know. Anyway, so they were making their own rum. Originally, they were selling it just from the barrel. So you would just show up with your own bottle. You'd fill it up from their barrel, and they'd charge you for that.
Show up with your plastic milk gallon jug.
Just however much rum you can carry out of the building.
Yeah.
They were doing that up until around World War I. And they sort of made a deal, I don't know, with the British Navy officers that they would get their used bottles from the officers' mess, and then they would repurpose those into rum bottles.
Yeah, and then they'd seal them with a black sealing wax. And they just called it old rum, but what everybody remembered was that black sealing wax around the label, around the cap, and they'd all come in and say, let me have some of that black seal rum.
Yeah, that's hence the name. Of course, now the modern design for the bottle, it's cute. It's a little cheeky. They have a seal juggling barrels on the label, like a little cartoon seal. So it's black seal rum. It's a little seal cartoon character, but it's also then referencing the original wax.
Yeah.
Now, around the time, it was a similar time period to when they started bottling their rum, like World War I era, is when we get the supposed birth of the Dark and Stormy. It's worth noting that at the time, ginger beer was already a very popular thing of this era. It started sort of kicking off being brewed in in England, in like the mid 18th century, and then just sort of spread all around popularity. So this was a heyday for ginger beer. You've got rum being a very popular product. It's not wild that somebody put the two things in a glass together. And it was made in service for, you know, the British Navy had, you know, set up shop in Bermuda. They had one of their gentlemen clubs. We talked about one actually just last week. We talked about Pegu Club at Bermuda. Mm-hmm. A gentleman's club for British Navy officers. When I hear gentlemen's clubs, I assume exotic dancers, but this was just for fancy men who want to drink.
Well, it was the officers in the military. Yeah. The enlisted men weren't allowed. It was the officers because they were fancy enough to be in there and drink and not, you know, fight and stuff, I guess. I don't know.
Right. And they had their slightly fancier beverages. So the Dark and Stormy was sort of made in service to that originally. And, you know, it's got the sort of story behind it is that it was made for an old sailor who held it up and he looked at it and he said, it's the color of a cloud only a fool or a dead man would sail under. And so that's where they got the name, the Dark and Stormy. The dark being the rum and the stormy being the ginger beer.
Army mateys, we won't sail if it looks like our drink. That's what I kind of think. I kind of think that the Gosling in the first place, he was a pirate. I think that's what happened. They said, you got 91 days to get there. After that, you're a pirate again, and we're going to arrest you. So he had to get off the road, you know, so they wouldn't arrest him.
You made a whole myth. You made the HBO limited series about Gosling in your head.
That's right. Yeah, he was really a pirate. They said, here's your one chance. You take all this. You got 91 days to do it. If not, we're going to come get you. So he had to get off the ocean there after 91 days.
I mean, mate, who knows? I don't know. I don't know if it was actually. I mean, the idea that I like that there's a quote attributed to the naming of a drink, because we're in the era where we couldn't bother writing down like cocktail specs properly. Still, like, we're still not good at like remembering what we put in drinks. But somebody definitely was there to like write down this crusty old sailor comparing it to the stormy sky. Like, yeah. Put that down. This is gonna be really good for advertising campaigns in about 100 years.
Yeah, like they were thinking that far ahead.
Yeah, but you know, whatever. It's this is we've encountered this sort of a synthesis before, where the when you look at the timeline, the drinks that were sort of popular at the time, the way people were drinking at this time. Something like the Dark and Stormy being made, I'm sure lots of people were making this same combination all around the world at this time period, when you kind of pull back. And we've encountered these before. I feel like when we talked about wine and soda being put together, you know, we encountered several examples of that combination in different ways all around Europe, all around the same time period. So there was no like lightning in a bottle moment. Everybody was just riffing off of the same idea. And Dark and Stormy comes about kind of in the same fashion, where, you know, starting in the like late, like the 1890s, you had a, you know, when ginger ale and then ginger beer become all the craze, you had a popular way of drinking ginger ale, which was with a long lemon garnish in it called a horse's neck garnish. And it's really, you just like spiral peel a lemon and then you have a little hook on the end. So it hooks over the edge of your Collins glass and then spirals down into your glass. And this drink would also take on the name of the garnish and be called a horse's neck. So mm-hmm. non-alcoholic cocktail, popular way of drinking it. If you added a little bit of booze to that, it would give it a kick. So you'd call it a buck, like a horse, you know, like a
oh,
buck.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that became one of those drinks that just started, you know, whatever. If it was a rum buck, a whiskey buck, a gin buck, it just meant you were having ginger ale and then throw in some booze in there. And then, you know, the kind of, that was just sort of the family of drinks, of which the Moscow Mule, which actually comes a little after the Dark and Stormy, it was called Mule just because it's like, oh, it's like a different kind of horse, but we're using ginger beer, not ginger ale. So it's a mule. But it was still kind of under the same umbrella of the Buck family of drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And now in modern bartending, we tend to make those two distinct categories. Like if you call something a Buck, that means it's ginger ale and a spirit. And if you call something a mule, that means it's ginger beer and a spirit. But it's all one ingredient differences between everything that falls in this family, you know?
Well, that's two different things for me. One is I've never heard of a buck. I've heard of a mule, but I've never heard of a buck. And then the other is, and I guess I led a sheltered life growing up, but I have heard of ginger ale my whole life. I never really was a ginger ale drinker, but I've heard of it my whole life. But I had never heard of ginger beer until probably in the last 10 years, and that was in association with like a Moscow Mule. That was the first time I'd ever really heard of ginger beer. I don't know how I missed out on the ginger beer craze.
Well, I think there's, for the first part, why you've heard of a mule and not a buck, I feel like it's the same reason why a lot of people have heard of a margarita, but they haven't heard of a daisy. Whereas a margarita is mm-hmm. referencing the daisy cocktail build, right? Like the build was established mm-hmm. as that 2 3/4 3/4, but the 3/4 that's sweet, where in a sour it would be like a simple syrup or something, is a liqueur. That's what a daisy build is. And that's what mm-hmm. the margarita, the name margarita, is referencing. But that thing it was based on was kind of lost to time, and we just have the thing that came from it. Same thing is true with the Moscow Mule. That's what is the most, I would say, the most well-known drink outside of the Dark and Stormy that references back to the buck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a little cheeky, like, oh, it's based on a buck or a horse's neck, so we'll call it a mule. Like, it was just like the DNA of where it comes from is in the name. It's just that's the one that we all know most right. when we think of ginger beer and something. So the buck sort of gets lost to time, and the mule is what we associate. So it is interesting how that happens sometimes. Like, we have a reinterpretation of something that becomes popular, and the original just sort of gets forgotten.
So when the mule came along, the buck stops here.
Well, the buck stopped there, yes. Well, then the ginger beer thing, I would assume, because I feel the same thing, like I encountered ginger beer first in the bar, and I think along with craft cocktails reestablishing themselves in America and starting in the late 1990s up through the 2000s, ginger beer became more, you know, when you're looking at your old cocktail books, you're like, well, I don't need ginger ale for this. I need ginger beer. So there, ginger beer continued to be made and popular all around the rest of the world. But in America, it wasn't in demand because, you know, we didn't have cocktail culture that called for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fermented. It's not made like ginger ale is just seltzer with a flavored syrup, you know, it's
right.
It's just like any other soda pop, whereas ginger beer is traditionally and for the most part still a fermented beverage. You are fermenting sugar, yeast, ginger together, and you're brewing quite literally ginger beer. Now, it's not alcoholic. It can be slightly alcoholic, but, you know, it's a bit more of a real deal product that I think was sort of lost to mass produced like sodas in America. Nobody was making real good ginger beer for a while.
Yeah, well, that's what I would have thought, is it's just another soda. I wouldn't have thought of it as being a brewed product.
And you can make it at home, and it's delicious. And, I mean, there are plenty of brands out there that are good. But it is, I mean, it's also funny because now we also have, like, very, like, well-made ginger ales on the market. Like I don't know what, like bougie ginger ales exist. So it's not like it's an upgrade. It's just a different product. It's a lot more, it's a lot spicier. It's got, like, a pungent sort of fermenty quality to it that you don't get with ginger ale. Ginger ale's a lot lighter. It can be just as spicy, but, you know. So it's not one's better than the other. It's just, in essence, they're just two different products. So, you know, you can use both behind your bar. But
I and do... They had there in Bermuda the certain type of ginger beer that they recommended that was also made in Bermuda to go for your Dark and Stormy.
Yes, Barrett's. Barrett's was the one that the original Dark and Stormy was supposedly made with. So you use Gosling, Black Seal, and Barrett's ginger beer, which they recommended as the one you should use for the Dark and Stormy up until pretty recently, right?
Yeah, 2009, somewhere along the line, they had a breakup in management between the two companies. Somebody got upset or something, or greedy, and so Gosling Brothers said, to hell with it, we're going to make our own. So now they make their own ginger beer and cut Barrett's out of the equation. But that was never part of the legal thing. The Black Seal rum was legal to make a Dark and Stormy, but the ginger beer, I guess, is still a free-for-all.
It is. It's funny that I had never heard that it was a trademark name until honestly doing the research for this, because I was originally going to propose a much broader episode just about ginger in cocktails, which we can absolutely circle back to, because I think there's a lot there. But I started looking up, like, my first stop was the Dark and Stormy. I'm like, wait, it's trademarked? That's wild. That's so weird. Like, the bar I worked at for years, we had Cruzan Blackstrap rum was our rum that we poured for Dark and Stormies. And that was just how I learned how to make a Dark and Stormy, was that's what you want. You want Blackstrap rum.
And I've come across Blackstrap rum being advertised in, you know, making of certain cocktails, but I'd never heard of Black Seal rum. And I don't think I've ever seen it in a liquor store, unless it's just because I wasn't aware of it.
I mean, it's pretty ubiquitous. Like, it's a pretty popular brand, but it's not, I don't think it's functionally the only rum that bartenders use to make Dark and Stormies. I think a lot of bartenders are breaking the law out there. Probably for lots of reasons. Definitely in this case.
And the trademark is specifically dark and an apostrophe and an N, and then the word Stormy, and that's what they have trademarked. Whereas the International Bartender Association, they have been able to get away with using dark apostrophe N apostrophe, two apostrophes on either side of the N, to do their Dark and Stormy, and they don't have to abide by using the Black Seal rum.
Well, it's funny. It's a funny drink to trademark, because, you know, as not every drink can be ordered, like, can be deciphered by, like, a way that you order it. Okay, so, like, a drink that I don't think you should ever trademark a drink. That's just my personal opinion. I think it's a cumulative culture in bartending, but I digress. Like a Corpse Reviver number 2, right? That's a specific recipe. That you need to know the ingredients in that to make that drink.
Right.
But if I wanted a Dark and Stormy, but I wanted to get around the name, and because there is this precedent of mules and bucks, and we understand these terms in bartending, I could just say I want a rum mule, a dark rum mule, and get the same drink. Like, that's, there was already a way to order that drink without that name.
Right.
Like, it's not, you know, it's not like, oh, this is a, it's not like the secret recipe to Pepsi or Coke. It's two ingredients in a drink.
And a squeeze of lime.
And there's other language for explaining it, you know? And yeah. People get around this. Like, a Bermuda mule is what people will put on a menu just mm-hmm. to insinuate, like, it's going to be ginger beer and it's going to be a dark rum, a mm-hmm. blackstrap rum, or, you know.
Right. So just make up anything. Yeah, I saw one they said is referred to as a safe harbor.
That's cute. I like that. Well, and not to say, like, look, I'll be honest, like Gosling's is good rum. A Dark and Stormy made with Gosling's rum will be a very good Dark and Stormy. There's no reason. It's funny to me that they felt the need to trademark it, because I feel like it was already one of those, like, I'd say one of two that I would say is your go-to Dark and Stormy rum.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's funny because it's sort of like, if I went to a bar and ordered a Negroni, I would be a little offended if somebody made me a Negroni and put something other than Campari in it without telling me.
Right.
Like, if they made me like, oh, we don't actually have Campari here, I used a different aperitif. I'm like, well, that's not a Negroni. And that is a brand-specific cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
But Campari has no trademark on that. They just know that they've closely tied their identity to the drink enough that the drink can't be made without them.
And they earned that title.
Well, there is a little bit of that where it's like, you know, like Gosling's, you didn't need it almost makes me a little bit more like less likely to use you in my Dark and Stormy, because I don't like the fact that you tried to shut out everybody else.
Yeah,
because
it's like, if somebody felt like, if you don't have Campari, you can't make a Negroni, then okay, that's fair enough. But if they said, you don't have Black Seal rum, you can't make a Dark and Stormy. Well, yeah, I can. I can use this other dark rum, and it's just as good as far as I'm concerned.
I think they even made that comparison in court that Gosling's is a unique product similar to Campari that nothing else compares to. And I'm not gonna argue the intricacies, the quality of their rum, but I do think lots of things can stand in for it. They're, you know, it's just a funny little hitch in you know, cocktail culture that we, by and large, we have the sort of evolution that we have with drinks because there's nobody constantly running to, you know, legal officiants to say, this is mine, I did it, I'm the first one to put whiskey and grapefruit together. Like, we would get
everybody
nowhere
has to use my whiskey.
If everybody did that. Yeah, like, nothing would progress if we did that.
Yeah.
And, like, even when somebody does break out and have one of those drinks where, like, you know, I'm thinking of, like, I'm always fascinated when a modern classic happens, when something like, even like we talked about with the Jasmine, right? Like, that was very recent. That was 90s.
Right.
This drink was made, it caught on, and now if you order a Jasmine, you're expected to know that recipe that was made back in the 90s. You mm-hmm. can't use that name and call any other drink that, or mm-hmm. else you'll be wrong.
Right.
But that didn't happen through legal means. That just happened because you made a drink that was popular enough that it earned the name and the place in bartending. It's very weird. This feels like old world, like tradesman stuff, but I guess in the bar world, we still operate that way.
Yeah. Well, and then if you want, they even have a premium version of their Black Seal rum that they keep and aged in barrels longer, and it's supposed to get smoother and richer, and they don't even recommend using that for a Dark and Stormy. They recommend drinking that straight because it's supposed to be so good.
But is it legal to use that rum in a Dark and Stormy?
I would say no. It's not that. You can't say in all derivatives thereof.
I don't know. It's fascinating. Yeah, I mean, you know, and I'm sure, like, the only place this really affects is, like, big chain restaurants that might put a Dark and Stormy on the menu would absolutely use Gosling's to avoid any legal ramifications.
So right.
I'm sure it works out. I like their rum a lot. I think it makes it, I would mm-hmm. say it might make one of my favorite Dark and Stormies. There are other mm-hmm. rums I might reach for if price wasn't considered, but still
mm-hmm.
just a very silly thing that they did. They did it in the 90s. I don't know. That was before the cocktail culture really fully reinvigorated. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
And in that way, they were pretty smart because it was before everything happened. So they locked that in.
Yeah, I think it was like 1991
yeah.
when they actually got the ruling on it. So they hadn't been doing it. So they hadn't been doing it like since 1800s or something.
No.
It wasn't those guys. It was the guys nowadays.
Well, I think that's also in like the U.S. Like that's only in the U.S. market. Like I don't think it's that wide reaching. But it is. It's a good drink and it's a good rum. It's got some fun history to it. If you want to get a proper one, I guess, you know, you need to have a bottle of Gosling's. There are lots of ways to order that exact same drink.
That's right. And if you see James Gosling out selling around somewhere, his permit has expired, so please report him to your nearest authorities, your port authorities.
I think if you see James Gosling out selling things, you have bigger problems because...
He is a vampire.
that's a bigger story. I mean, I don't know. You proposed he was a pirate. If he's both a pirate and a vampire, I might circle back and say, you know what, sir? You do whatever you want. Because
we just found the next superhero genre. A pirate vampire. Yeah.
James Gosling. Vampirate.
Oh no!
Right there, it was right there.
I should have come up with that.
Why was it my job to do that?
I don't know, but you're going to have to draw one now.
Vampire.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm gonna make my own version of a dark and stormy, and I'm gonna call it the Vampire.
There you go.
No one can stop me.
It's got to have something red in it, then like grenadine or something.
No, oh, maybe yeah, maybe like a layer drink. Yeah, I will say this last thing stylistically. Often I see a dark and stormy served layered.
Mm-hmm.
So you put the ginger beer in first and then you just sort of float the rum on top. And I've had arguments with other bartenders about this. If this is aesthetically, it looks like what you would think a dark and stormy looks like because you have this sort of dark layer on top.
Sure.
But I don't ever want a drink where I have to, like, if you serve it, you have to tell the customer, please stir this many times. It's gonna taste like all ginger beer and then all rum, and that's gonna suck for you.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I've never heard a decisive answer on that. And I looked around, and like some bartenders fully recommend layering it, and some bartenders say no, you should put the rum in first and let it mix together because nobody wants to drink a drink like that. But it's. If you have an opinion about that, please share because I don't know.
Yeah, just say enjoy the view and then stir it before you drink it.
That's good. I guess you could do that. I hate serving drinks with instructions, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Many times I was like, stir this or pour this or don't drink it through the straw. Drink it from the top. I'm like, you can't trust people not to do that. That's
well,
a bad idea.
If I didn't have detailed instructions, the way I would have made that is to put the rum in first and pour the ginger beer over top.
I mean, the flavor is better that way because then it properly... like mixes.
Mm-hmm.
It looks cooler when you layer it, but then you have to tell people you need to stir it until it's all one color or it's going to taste a little funny. And I don't know.
Right.
That's a whole other layered cocktails are a whole other thing where it's like, I like style and function happening side by side. When style overtakes function and flavor, I have a problem with it, but that's just me. Anyway,
that's the dark and stormy and the ginger beer story.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Dad, for joining us.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I learned about both those things that I didn't know about.
It's all over the place.
black seal rum, ginger beer. I didn't know about any of that. I led a sheltered life, like I said. I don't know.
Well, thank you, listeners, for being with us. If you want to find us on the internets, we are Neat Boozecast on Instagram. We are... neattheboozecast@gmail.com if you want to email us any questions or comments. We have a Patreon if you want to check that out. We got rewards and bonus content, and if you want to talk about your own vampire theories, you can do that
at Neat the Boozecast group page on Facebook.
We'll probably archive of our own, but that's different.
We'll all meet there.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
that's what we should start, is an action-adventure series.
The story of James Gosling, the Vampirate.
I'm sure that there's a D&D campaign there somewhere.
Somewhere. There's got to be one.
In search of the Black Seal Rum. Arby mateys.